Deathcast.
Hello and welcome to the Deathcast. I'm your host, best-selling author Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me for this very special Saturday afternoon special-esque edition of the Deathcast called a Lifecast. Today I am pleased to be joined by a special guest. He's the brother and former manager of a man who is a personal hero of mine. That would be the one and only Sam Kinison. We are joined by Sam's brother, Bill. Before we get into the interview, I have my normal plugs. If you'd like to follow me on social media, that would be Facebook, Instagram, and MeWe. Just search for Ian Totten, author. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, look for me at Corpse Creek. If you'd like to help support the show, go to your favorite podcast app, like and subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star review, share it on social media. If you'd like to further help out the show, go to the official website for the show, that's CorpseCreekPublishing.com. There you can get updates on upcoming books, as well as sign up for the mailing list. And if you're so inclined, make a donation. There's a donation button on the page, just click on it. Make a donation, buy me a cup of coffee or a pack of cigarettes, just help with the production of this show. No amount is too small and no amount is too large. For those of you who have already made a donation, I'd like to thank you. Now that business is out of the way, get yourself something to drink, find a chair, kick back and relax. I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes. Let's go talk to Bill Kinison. We are joined today by a very special guest. I've alluded a few times over the last couple of weeks that I had some interviews coming up, and this is the very first one, and I'm honored to have this individual. His brother was quite possibly the largest stand-up comedian in the world in the late 1980s, and he's agreed to come on today and talk about him. I'm talking about the one and only Bill Kinison, brother of the late Sam Kinison. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Ian, I'm doing great, man. Glad to be on the show with you. We were supposed to do this on Saturday, but then when I got up in 9/11, that was, I don't know why, 20 years later, that was still fresh to me. And I was like, man, I can't. I just can't get myself up to do an interview. But I'm glad we hooked up now.
As am I. I understand you with 9/11. I was on board an aircraft carrier when that happened, and it was one of the most surreal moments of my life.
It was horrible.
Yes, it was. I shipped off a couple days after that and went overseas. So, all right, so we're going to get right into the meat of this thing. I know I only got you for a little while.
All right.
Who is Bill Kinison, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, man. Let's see. I don't know. I never have anybody ever ask me that stuff. I'm a former minister. I manage Sam, his career. And then when he passed, I won a Grammy. I produced several award-winning documentaries, and then I did Robin Williams, who was a good friend. I did his eulogy, and I had several friends that came up afterwards and goes, man, that's what you ought to be doing. You ought to be back in the ministry. And so what we are doing presently is we're on Facebook, and we have over 3,000 that watch us live, and I don't know how many during the week. And we do a program called The Gospel According to Kinison, and it's really more motivation than it is church. And I really enjoy it. I really enjoy it. But that's me.
All right. Yes, I checked it out this past weekend. I'm not very religious. I'm more of a spiritual individual, but I enjoyed what I heard.
Well, see, that program's perfect for you because we don't have very many religious people, I don't think. I think most of them are just spiritual.
Yeah, I can wrap my head around that. So, and like as I said, what I heard was
good. So I will be putting a link to wherever it is you have it, that in the description for this show. So,
Okay.
Of course. So your brother, Sam, and you, were you the oldest? Was he the oldest?
I was 5 years older, but Sam lived more life in 38 years than I'll ever live if I live to be 100. But I was the oldest brother.
And what kind of, how did you guys grow up?
Well, I was very athletic. I was a wrestling state champion in high school. And I played basketball and baseball. Sam wasn't very athletic. He tried it, but he just was not an athletic person. And so he started getting into actually heavy metal. I remember first concert he took me, or had me to take him to, was Black Sabbath. And that was in the 60s, late 60s. And I was into folk music. So I had no idea that one day Ozzy Osbourne would be friends of Sam and I. And so that's where he went.
Now, and I understand that your guy's father was a preacher.
That was the family business. My dad, I had three brothers. All three was preachers for a time. Sam preached for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, no one ever told us that, we were Pentecostal for one thing, which is like in the ladder of religion, that's like a step above the snake handlers. And no one ever told us that we were supposed to preach, but you kind of had that underlying psychology that the reason you was in this family is that you're supposed to be a preacher, and you wouldn't be happy unless you were a preacher. And so we all four ended up doing it at one time.
Was that like tent revival type stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I've seen
Yeah, speaking in tongues, dancing, and I never could get into casting out the demons. I'm sorry, man.
I was just going to ask you.
That was a little beyond. That's a little stress for me. I just didn't believe in that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. I got dragged to a Baptist revival in New York at one point, and they were doing that, and it was mind-blowing.
Yeah, there's not much difference in Baptists and Pentecostals. We were just independent rather than being in an organization. That was the only difference.
Okay. And see, and you guys, you grew up in Illinois?
Joy, Illinois.
Okay.
And we grew up in the same projects as Richard Pryor, but we didn't know Richard until Sam was in comedy, and then we ended up being very, very close friends.
Oh, very cool. So this one comes from a bit that Sam did on one of his albums. I really got into him in the mid-90s. I knew who he was. I remember when he passed away, but I really got into him when I was in my teenage years. But he threw out the line about, you're not the one that ran away when your dad died. Was there any truth to that, or was that just a bit of his?
Actually, he ran away before dad died. And we didn't know his 14. We didn't know if he's alive or dead for 2 years. Then we found out that dad did. And Sam had made a deal with him that, if he wouldn't tell us, he'd always tell him where he was at. And dad would send him money and stuff. And then he ended up going to a Bible college that I had went to, and he lasted there for about a year, and then my dad died.
Okay.
And that's when he said it was like the Julian Lennon thing. I got to do it for dear old dad. He is named after dad, and he just felt like that, he had to do it more out of respect to his dad than that's what he should be doing.
Okay. So Was Sam successful as a preacher, or not really?
No, not really. We had a brother, our oldest brother, Richard, mm-hmm. who was born severely mentally handicapped and blind.
Mm-hmm.
And at the age of 13, he was miraculously healed. He said an angel appeared to him and said he was healed. And he was 2 years older than me. He was 13 at the time. And so he had to start school literally at 13. And he graduated from high school with me. And I was 2 years older. So he caught up and we graduated together. One of my proudest moments.
Wow, I can imagine.
And so having to follow that, and then I was, preachers thought I was an extremely good preacher. They used to call me a preacher's preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a little hard for Sam to follow. I mean, that's tough. And he tried. He tried for 7 years. He caught his wife in an affair. And in our circles, Pentecostal circles, that's the worst thing could happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
They used to say, if you can't take care of your own house, you're not fit for the house of God. And so he was through, and he came to the church I was pastoring and told me what happened. And so I told him, I said, and he told me, he said, dude, I preached for 7 years. I haven't made $5,000 in any 1 year. And so I said, Sam, I want you to take some time. And I want you to stop and look down inside of you and find out what you've always wanted to do. And he took about 5 seconds and said, I always want to be a stand-up comedian. And so I said, okay, set a date and pass that date. Don't ever preach again or you'll keep going back to it. And that's how I got into comedy.
Where did he start with in comedy?
He started in Houston, Texas. And he had found a girlfriend after he got divorced. He had found a girlfriend, and she lived in Houston. And they would talk on the phone, and she was looking at the paper. And in the paper, they were going to have this club, which seemed about, it was really a bar. Mm-hmm. Seemed about 60 people. And in a week, they was going to teach you how to be a stand-up comedian, which I think is really funny now looking back.
Yeah,
but Sam and several Yakov Smirnoff started there, Bill Hicks, several that end up having careers. But Sam was, from the first time up, he was a natural, and he was by far, you know, the guy that everybody else looked to, and that's how he got into comedy.
So was it immediately after he was in this week's school that he went to California, or did he stay around in Texas for a while?
No, he was in Houston for 2 years.
Okay.
And he was both years he was voted the Texas Comedian of the Year, and I remember he went to Hollywood and Mitzi asking me, "Have you ever done comedy?"
Mm-hmm.
And Sam said, yeah, I was the Texas Comedian of the Year 2 years in a row. And she goes, where is Texas? Other words, it.
Yeah.
That don't mean nobody. Anything.
Yeah.
And so he actually came out with Bill Hicks, mm-hmm. and Yakov Smirnoff and about three or four other guys. And he auditioned or whatever for Mitzi. And after he got through, he went to her booth and she to find out what she thought. And so she said, you're not funny. I tell you what, I'll make you a doorman and you can see how the pros did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is a doorman for 5 years.
So humble beginnings, to say the least.
Yeah, but he was still good. You know, she would hold him off till like 2 o'clock in the morning, but they would get phone calls wanting to know when Sam was coming up. And this was like an underground kind of a following, mm-hmm. porno stars, rock stars, you name it. I mean, and so they would pack the place at 2 o'clock in the morning. And the reason she did that was to sell drinks up till when he came in or went up, because she knew they was going to sell a shitload then.
Yeah.
And so that's how it happened.
That's amazing. Was this during the period of time when the people at the Comedy Store weren't getting paid?
That was right after.
Okay.
So Sam wasn't, I mean, immediately after. He wasn't in that.
Okay.
But even when he was a star, the funny thing is, they went on this strike. And, you know, they want to be paid. Well, you know what? They end up getting paid, and they're still getting paid today. $35 a night. And that's what Sam made up until he made it.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't get far on $35 a night, I can tell you that.
Nope, sure can't. You can't even eat. So I supported him, you know, that whole time.
Yeah.
And I would come out whenever it looked like, you know, there might be something, you know, that would happen for him. I'd come out and deal with it, but there never was. Never was. And his break came from Rodney Dangerfield, who had seen him in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And really, he'd only been doing comedy about 6 weeks. And Rodney played a place in Houston called The Arena, big venue. And then he would go to a little comedy club afterwards, which Sam ended up doing. And so the club, and they didn't have these clubs everywhere. So he went to this little bar, and Sam happened to be on stage. And so I was at the bar, and I told the bartender, he came in with his entourage. I said, you know, whatever they want, I'll take care of it. So he goes over and takes their order and then tells them the guy at the bar is going to pay for it. And so Rodney had me come over and sit next to him and join the crowd. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget. I guess there isn't any filter on what we say here, huh?
No, not at all.
Okay, I just don't want to get you in trouble.
No.
Anyhow, so I remember sitting there. Now, he doesn't know I have any connection with Sam at all. He just knows I'm buying their drinks.
Yeah.
And so he looks over at me and says, hey, this kid's a fucking genius. He's going to be big one day, I'm telling you. I don't know how long it's going to take him because he's not too disciplined, but he's a fucking genius. And so after Sam got through, I had him come over. I introduced the two of them. They immediately formed a friendship. Matter of fact, the three of us formed a friendship. And then every time that Sam... You know, when he's in L.A., when he hit there, and every time Rodney would see him, he'd go, how many minutes have you got? And Sam would always be honest with him. I got 10 minutes. I got 15 minutes. I got 20 minutes. And then one night, he had just finished the show at Universal, and he came there. And again, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. And Sam got up and performed. And so when he came off stage, Rodney talked to him and said, hey, I'm doing this. A young comedian special on HBO. I think it'd really help you. Well, I owned a comedy club in Madison, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had the Showtime Funniest Man in America finals there.
Yeah.
So Sam thought that this was a contest, and I did too. And Sam wasn't going to win any contest. You know, with the material he did back in 86, it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And so Sam told him, said, I don't do contests, and kind of walked away. And so Rodney asked some of the other comics, says, where's his brother? Where's his brother, Bill? They said, and I had moved out there then. And they said, I think he's at home. So, well, give me his phone number. So he called me like 3 o'clock in the morning. Tells me the same thing. Hey, yeah, I'm doing this young comedian special, and I think it'd be great for Sam. And so I tell Rodney, I go, you know, Rodney, he don't do contests. Now, I'll never forget, Rodney goes, what the fuck is it with you two guys? It's not a goddamn contest. I'm telling you, it's a showcase. I think it could do something. So I said, all right, I'll talk to him tomorrow and see what happens. And so the next day I called Sam and told him Rodney called me. And so Sam goes, I ain't doing any contests, man. I go, well, he says it's a showcase. And the good news is we get a free trip to New York. And so we did it because we got a free trip to New York.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't think 6 minutes was going to do anything. And so we go up to New York, and the night before they filmed it, they did a live show where the cameras could get their angles and the grips could get the sound and all that. And Sam cleared the room. He was the last one up, and he cleared the room. They walked out on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes over to Rodney and tells Rodney, he said, Rodney, I can't get going in 6 minutes. Rodney goes, hey, tomorrow night you're going to kill, Sammy. I'm telling you, you're going to kill tomorrow night. Well, the next night came, and I don't know if you've seen the HBO special.
Yes, I have.
But that 6 minutes changed his life from that moment. All of a sudden, I had more business I could take care of. In a week after that aired, we had a 4 special deal with HBO. We had a 4 record deal with Warner Brothers. I think we had a 4 appearances scheduled on Saturday Night Live, 4 on David Letterman. I mean, all within a week. And that was it. We never looked back.
Yeah, that's, you know, I've seen interviews with other comedians who've said, you know, Sam, when he started out, he would say, you know, I can get him once I get going, but it's that getting going that's the problem. And I assume that's similar to what he was telling Rodney.
Yeah. That's exactly what he was telling me. I can't get going in 6 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, you got to remember, he just spent like 5 years dealing with drunks at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I've seen, there's clips out there on YouTube and other places of his early stand-up before, you know, he really became, you know, the Sam Kinison that we all know. And you can see the glimmers in there of what he would become, but there's lulls in it.
Yeah.
So after that, I mean, you guys were just off to the races?
Yeah, I remember we put together a 40-city tour immediately. And our first show was down in Fort Lauderdale. It was actually at a rock club.
Mm-hmm.
We had 3,000 there standing. And we did the show. And I remember I went and settled with the promoter. And he gave us a check for $12,000. So Sam's on the tour bus. Now, you got to remember, he's been making $35.
Yeah.
And we come out, and so he goes, "How did we do, brother?" And I said, "I just picked up a check for $12,000. And so, man, we hugged each other. I think we probably even cried. We thought we had made it, and not knowing at the end of that 40-city tour, I didn't consider an offer of less than
$50,000. Mm-hmm.
And we eventually topped out at $175,000.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
That's a huge jump.
Oh, yeah. That was at Universal in Hollywood.
Okay. So now, with all of this going on, were the drugs already in his life at this point, or was success it is at when it started?
No, he'd been, from the time he got out to Hollywood, I mean, you're running in, you know, you're meeting Richard Pryor, you're meeting Robin Williams, you're meeting these guys, and they had what they called the mansion, which is really a dump up the hill from the Comedy Store.
Mm-hmm.
And they would all meet there afterwards and party.
Okay.
And Sam had an addictive personality. He couldn't do anything in moderation. I don't care what it was.
I know how that is.
If, you know, if he liked a song, then he had to buy every album by that person.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he just had an addictive personality. So so he did it for 5 years before he hit.
Okay.
So he'd been party. He was the party monster for 5 years before he ever hit big.
Now, so he's basically on top of the world at this point. He's really one of the largest comedians on the planet. How did the twins come into this?
You talking about the Double Mint twins?
I know the one he married.
Oh, no, they weren't twins. They were just sisters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Malika is the one that he ended up marrying. He really loved Sabrina, mm-hmm. which was her sister.
Okay.
And he met him. I think he met Malika in Vegas. Actually, I think I met her at the same time and mm-hmm. never thought anything. She was a guy named Angel Salazar's girlfriend. Nobody thought anything. And I was at his house in Hollywood, and he was out doing something. The phone rang, and I answered it, and it was supposedly Malika.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Malika, and I'd like to know if Sam would like to get something to eat. So I said, "Well, I'll give you a phone number, and he can call you when he comes in." So when he comes in, I go, because I didn't remember. And so he comes in, I go, goes, any call? I said, yeah, you got some call from a gal named Malika. He goes, what's it about? And I go, well, she wants to meet you somewhere to have something to eat. And I said, here's her phone number. So he called her back. Well, end up finding out it wasn't Malika. It was Sabrina calling for Malika.
Okay.
So when he went down and met Malika to get a bite to eat, he actually met Malika and Sabrina. And they must have hit it off because they moved in that night.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you look at the specials that he did, if I'm not mistaken, that's the two of them up on stage with him and another.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's them.
Yeah. Now, how did Howard Stern come into the picture? Because I know that was another, you know, career milestone, so to speak.
Well, it was Howard, I think, was just on New York and Philadelphia when we went up there. We took a red eye, and Howard did not like stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
And but Sam had so much heat that he decided to have him on, but he wasn't excited about it. And he let it be known that he didn't like stand-up comedians. And the reason was, we didn't know when we first went there, but the reason was that the stand-ups would never come out of character on his show.
Okay.
And so Sam and I's riding in this plane, red-eye, from New York, or L.A. to New York, and Sam's nervous, which was unusual. He's nervous. Said, dude, what do I do? And I said, well, the first thing you do when you walk in, give it up to him. You're the king. He's the king of all media, which is where that came from, by the way.
Yeah.
And he's the king of all media. Give it up to him. And I said, because he's probably got an ego bigger than the building where the studio's at.
Mm-hmm.
So we went. Well, Sam goes even further. He walks into the studio when they bring him in, and he gets down on his knees and starts bowing to him. You're the king. You're the king. You're the king of all media. And that fed right into, you know, Howard's ego.
Yeah.
And from then on, they were just friends. And if you ever seen any of Sam's interviews, it wasn't a shtick. It was him. That was the real guy. And Howard loved that.
Oh, yeah. Now, I have somewhere, I have the recordings from when Sam was on his show. That's the only part of the show I liked. I never was a Howard Stern fan.
But yep.
Your brother was just something special. At least, you know, for me, I told you in the message I sent you when I contacted you, and I was a bit of a rebellious teen, and he instantly grabbed me.
Yep.
But, I mean, it speaks to how big he is. You know, I know I have younger listeners out there. I was in, you know, I think second or third grade when he was on the Bundy show, Married with
Children. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Their highest rated show ever, by the way.
I remember my sister and I were not allowed to watch that show, and somehow we were allowed to watch it because Sam Kinison was on it. You know, so, I mean, that tells you he was in a force of nature and kind of a cultural icon. He was everywhere. So.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of different documentaries on your brother and everything. Whenabouts did the drugs really start affecting him? I mean, as far as his performance and stuff, because this is no disrespect to your brother. I know there was a period in the late 80s, early 90s, it seemed like he was having some problems at times when he was on stage.
They were, and I'm not defending. Sam's life is what it was.
Yes.
His problems are what they were and everything else. But I never seen anybody that was as resilient as he was. Mm-hmm. If I could get him on stage, they got a great show.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not saying
I know what you're saying. And you're right. Because there were, I remember we had a show in Vegas, was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Was a disaster. But I mean, they were far and few between.
Yeah.
And it made it very difficult for me because I never partied. I didn't even drink.
Mm-hmm.
And it made it very difficult because if I went, you know, Sam, look what you're doing to your career. And he would say, well, look at the reviews, brother. And he was right. The reviews were always, always great. But when you get this, what they call, you know, this lull, it wasn't so much as drugs. It was Hollywood had turned on him.
Okay.
You know, I mean, he was in the, he was going to do the Atuk movie.
Okay.
And I guess they were trying to scare him or something. And so they said, well, we're thinking about pulling the plug. So Sam gets up and he goes, well, I'm going back to L.A. We were in New York at the time getting ready to shoot. He's actually in costume. So I'm going back to L.A. Well, everybody dropped him. Everybody dropped him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, agents. Only two that were standing was myself and our business manager that mm-hmm. handled the money. Every other one dropped him, and then they tried to ruin him.
Yeah.
And they almost did. And I worked his ass off just to keep his, you know, his head above water.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was trying to think who could I get? And Sam started hooking up with these rockers.
Yeah.
Well, Irving Azoff was the biggest agent for rockers that was in the business. And so I invited him to come to the Comedy Store and in the showroom where Sam was going to do a show. And I said, I just want you to look at him. Forget about everything you've heard. You're a rock. I mean, you know, you deal with rockers, so you know how that shit works.
Yeah.
And so so he watched him, and when he got through, he goes, yeah, I'm interested. I want to get in business with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, he managed, I mean, he was the agent for Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, all these guys. And so they all started hooking up. So Sam started appearing in their videos. They appeared in Sam's videos. But Sam would like, he always liked to put together a all-star band if we were in L.A. or Vegas or New York. And these were the guys that would come and do it for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I got to be the rock comedian.
Yeah, the whole Wild Thing video. And
yeah, yeah.
I know one of the albums has a couple other songs that he did. I think he did a cover of Mississippi Queen.
Yeah, well, that now that that was not my idea, by the way. Under my thumb, he did that. Mississippi Queen, that wasn't quite the... he actually did it without ever telling me.
Yeah.
Because he knew I was going to go, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm
here with a skull cap on and making fun of Sinead O'Connor.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, out in a cemetery, I was like, what are you doing?
I remember getting that album and hearing it.
Yeah.
And you get through all the comedy, and all of a sudden there's like three or four songs. It's like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Well, he's trying to branch out, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, except for Mississippi Queen, they were actually pretty good. I mean, Wild Thing, I think, climbed up in the 30s on the charts.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed them. I still have all the CDs. Pulled over from my Navy days. But did, okay, this was one of the questions I was asked. How did Jeff?
Oh, bring it on, man. Bring it on.
How did Jessica Hahn come into the picture?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
We had heard of Jessica Hahn, or at least mm-hmm. I had, when I was in the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
She attended a church in Brooklyn called, I don't remember the name of the church, the pastor was Gene Provetta. He probably don't appreciate me putting his name out there. And the reputation was that if you preached at his church, you had a gal there that was going to take care of you.
Yeah.
And that was Jessica Hahn. And I turned down every time I had an invitation there. I turned it down first because I wasn't like that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go to Brooklyn. Shit. And anyhow, now you got the Jim Baker thing, which we knew or I knew. Yeah, the guy that was with them was John Fletcher, which is the one that hooked Jessica Hahn up with her with Jim Baker and him.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew John Fletcher when he started. And Cindy, all this Jim Baker thing hits. Well, we're doing a show at the Universal Amphitheater, sold out. and they're in Hollywood. Sam somehow runs into her, probably partying the night before or something. So he invites her to the show. So when I get there, and we've got all kinds of people that are backstage, because we have five drummers and I don't know how many guitars. I mean, everybody's there. It's Sam Kennison. So Sam goes, "Hey, man, I want you to meet somebody." So I said, "All right." So he takes me outside, and here's this gal. And so he goes, "Bill, this is Jessica Hahn." So she gives me a hug. Then when she gives me a hug, she goes, oh, I'm sorry. I'm said, "They're still hard." And I was like, "What?" Said, "My tits are still hard. I just had them done." And so that was kind of my, that was my meeting of Jessica Hahn. Well, after Universal was over, the next night, Sam has to fly up to Northern California to a big resort called Circle Theater, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So he rents a Lear. I don't go. And he takes Jessica Hahn with him. They come back and they spend the night. And according to Sam, I guess if you watched interviews, it was one of the worst romantic nights he's ever had.
Yeah, I'm ready. But
the problem was, after that, we couldn't get rid of her. I mean, if Sam did the Howard Stern show, she's calling in.
Yeah.
If he did the Larry King show, she's calling in. She started showing up at our gigs across the country where the radio stations would fly her in to, you know, try to get attention for their radio station. And we couldn't get rid of the gal. And so Sam's routine about it was that, you know, they had a relationship. It ended early because checkout was at 2. And that was pretty much it. That's the only time they ever hooked up, by the way.
And that's, I had heard that, and I also, I actually, in prep for this, listened to an interview you did on another show. It was a couple years ago, I think.
Oh, okay.
I just listened to it just to get an idea of what was covered, what wasn't covered.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So, now.
Well, I hope my story stayed the same.
It has stayed the same. I'm trying to give you some questions that are different than what were asked, because, you know,
yep,
there's more to your brother's story than just what meets the eye.
Yeah.
So now we're going to jump into the 90s. Your brother, did he start cleaning up? I mean, as the drugs and the alcohol?
He was basically clean. The last year and a half of his life. Now, okay, when I say basically clean, he never considered pot as drugs.
Okay.
But, you know, he might have maybe once every 3 or 4 months, he'd have a night.
Yeah.
But other than that, that was it. So that's the reason I say he was basically clean. And yeah, I could deal with that. I mean, for 6 years, I dealt with every night.
Mm-hmm.
But I could deal with that, so I had no problem with that.
Yeah, you know, I don't.
And his real problem was alcohol. He could quit blow anytime he wanted.
Yeah,
but if he had one drink, he was in.
We're gonna move towards when your brother passed away. Now, I've heard and I've read he had just come back from getting married, or.
He got married 5 days before.
Okay. And was he, like, you know, I've read other things, too, that said he was kind of starting, like, a comeback tour, so to speak.
There again, you know, I don't understand, like, the comeback stuff. We'd already done the comeback stuff, like, in 1990.
Okay.
Matter of fact, in the 5 days that he was gone on his honeymoon, I signed a 4-movie deal with New Line. I just signed a new 3-year deal with the Las Vegas Hilton. I just signed his own TV series on Fox.
Yeah.
Called the Sam Kennison Family Entertainment Hour. So to me, that doesn't sound like we're bouncing back. It sounds like we've been there.
Oh, yeah. That's
and so that's how I look at it. But, you know,
Yeah, I mean, well, if I know for myself, when I look at his career, the whole section where he, you know, he's doing the family entertainment tour is like peak.
Oh, yeah.
I love that stuff with, was it Doug Beatty?
Yep. Oh, yeah, Doug. Yeah, that was one of Jerry's kids.
Yes, that's that whole bit is hilarious.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. Doug is at with a guy that took care of him named Dave Lerman. Dave Lerman's still alive, I believe. Doug passed away. But they were at a fundraiser for MS.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry had had too much to drink. And he saw, I shouldn't be laughing, but it's funny. So he saw Doug in, you know, in the wheelchair. And if you've ever seen the thing, that's how he was. He's like, you know what, 2.5 feet tall or 3 feet tall,
yeah,
or something.
Mm-hmm.
And twisted up body. And Jerry sees him and starts heading straight to him. Goes, I know who you are, you little bastard. I've seen you with Sam Kinison. And he actually attacks him and tears his shirt. And they settled out of court for $10,000, I think. But I could just see Jerry Lewis drunk heading over there going, you little bastard.
That actually makes the bit much better.
Yeah.
His whole fuck him line really, yep, means it.
Yeah, we carried Doug on tour with us for that one routine that Sam would do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is great. Okay, so now we're...
So maybe Jerry wasn't as compassionate about these kids as he let on.
Yeah, I've heard some things from some people I know. That seems to run prevalent in the entertainment industry. Your brother might be one of the few who I've never heard anything bad about.
Well, you just haven't talked to the right people, believe me.
Well, everybody...
Believe me, Sam, either you loved him or you hated him.
Yeah, well, everybody...
There was not a middle ground.
There's people that'll say that about me, too, so...
Yeah, but that's all of us.
Yeah.
But Sam's been gone now 29 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a tremendous cult following.
Oh, yeah, I know he
that
does.
That is mind-blowing. And now you got to remember, 30 years ago, so in other words, if you weren't 15 years old by that time, you never knew who this guy was.
Mm-hmm.
But yet he has this unreal following. And every year at his death, this year, there was over 2,000 posts. I put on a post, which I always say this is going to be the last year, but then so many people start posting, I have to say something.
Yeah.
And so I put on a post, which pretty basically was, you know, I'm proud to say Sam, mm-hmm, Kinison was my brother.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, comedians are a very, they're a very close-knit group.
Mm-hmm.
They're also some of the most jealous and insecure people I've ever met in my life. And I said, I notice every year people post all kinds of tributes and everything else about Sam. I hardly ever see a comedian do that.
Yeah.
I said, but you have all kinds of rockers that do. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think the reason is that when you're all struggling, comedians are, they love each other.
Yeah.
But then when one of them make it, they actually are jealous about it because they usually feel like they should have made it.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else. And I think that's exactly what happened with Sam. I mean, for 5 years, he's back there hanging with whoever will hang with him. Then he hits, and nobody wants to hang with him anymore except rockers.
Yeah.
So anyway, but he still has a tremendous, large following.
Oh, I know he does. Believe me. I'm a writer by trade, and you'd be surprised how many other authors are fans of your brother.
you know, in the writers groups online, they, you know, they throw around his jokes.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of those, like you said, he's either universally loved or universally disliked.
Yeah. And so, I understood that. I mean.
Yeah. He wasn't for anyone. He, for yeah. everyone. It was, you know, the anti-PC.
Yeah. And he also, so, he never compromised.
Yeah.
The comedy you've seen before he died was the comedy, and I ain't talking about the routines, because first, he never wrote a routine.
Mm-hmm.
And second, everything he did, which made it so easy to manage him, for we did 280 shows a year,
mm-hmm.
and everything he did was, I'd say 80-90% of it was off the cuff, what was happening right now.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was his real genius. Because, as you know, looking at his stuff, he was a storyteller. He wasn't a joke teller.
Yeah.
But he could make anything funny.
Well, you can see that, too, just looking. If you watch different clips of his quote-unquote bits,
yeah.
the general story is the punchline will be the same, but the way he goes about telling it is different every time.
I remember when he did the HBO special with Rodney. He did this bit. He actually, I think, kind of, no, it first opened with Marlboros. Then the mm-hmm. next thing was Starving Children.
Yes.
And when he told me he's going to do that, I go, Sam, you better be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're getting up there and going to make fun of starving children. And he got up and it was hilarious. You know, a little Haji in a mud hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, won't you please help? And he says, you know, there's a director standing there a foot away going, don't feed him, don't feed him, I need hunger. And Sam was like, you know, the crew could have gave this kid a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And it hit. But, I mean, you look at most of his stuff, man, if you're not funny,
yeah, they're
going to run you out of town.
Mm-hmm.
But he had this gift. He always had that gift.
Yeah. He could just turn it.
Yeah.
So, all right, now, just really quickly, if you would, what happened the day that your brother passed away?
Well, he just got back that morning, took a red eye from Hawaii to L.A. We were going to Laughlin, Nevada for our last casino connection. I had negotiated a 3-year deal there.
Yeah.
And so we were going there to for me to sign the contracts and Sam to pick up, you know, what I call chump change,
mm-hmm.
which was still a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so he was supposed to fly into Vegas and then they would send a limo up to get him and bring him down to Laughlin.
Mm-hmm.
He got back from the red eye and he called me and said he didn't want to take the jet. He wanted to drive. Mm-hmm. He was always afraid he's going to die in a plane wreck.
And yeah.
So I said, okay, well, we'll meet at Barstow, which we did. I don't know if you're familiar with California.
Yeah. I lived in Cali for 10 years.
Okay. Well, we met at Barstow. And I had rented a van and had the opening act and the security guy
mm-hmm.
With me. And the reason I rented the van is after the show on Sunday, I wanted to come home.
Yeah.
Actually, on Saturday, it's going to be on Saturday. They do the show, and then I was going to come home because there's only 240 miles.
Yep.
And so he was driving there, and then things got a little weird. He needed to get some gas about 20 miles from Laughlin.
Mm-hmm.
And so we pulled into this place for him to fill up his tank. And so while they're filling it up, we get to talking. And I tell him, I think we need to get a new booking agent. I think we pretty well juiced this one as well as we can. And so he's like, man, we just got him like 2 months ago. And I said, well, dude, I'm telling you, I think we've already juiced his connections.
Yeah.
So he said, well, you take care of business. And so you do what you think you ought to do. So I said, all right. And then I had a pair of Oliver People's sunglasses. They're about $300 a pair.
Mm-hmm.
And he had several pairs. And so I had mine on. And he goes, you know, man, you know, everybody comes to my house. They steal my sunglasses.
And so I said, well, here, I'll give you mine. So I gave him my sunglasses. Then he turned around to the security guy, pretty much, that was filling up his car. And he said, I'm going to tell you, this is the most honest guy I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he wanted us, where it started getting weird is, he wanted us to empty his car mm-hmm. and put everything in the van. And I was like, dude, we're like 20 miles from Laughlin, and I want it all out of the car. So we did. We had this dog, a poodle mix named mm-hmm. Russo.
Mm-hmm.
And he went everywhere with him. I mean, he flew with him, everything else. And so he tells me, he says, have him get Russo and put him in the van. So I'm just standing there thinking, man, this is weird. But, you know, we're only 20 miles away. Well, he pulled out in front of me, which he never did, because usually he didn't know where we were going. And so we got on this, what they call River Road, 20 mm-hmm. miles to Laughlin. We went 3.2 miles, and we could see this. I was behind him. He obviously couldn't hear me, but I was talking. And I saw this van, this truck, mm-hmm. and he saw it too. And so he was, I'm telling him, slow down, Sam. Slow down, let this guy back in his lane. It was a two-lane road. Mm-hmm. It's passing a bunch of cars, and I'm telling him, slow down, and Sam slowed down to about 15 miles an hour. The last second, this guy pulls back in line. So we had like a second of just, whew.
Yeah.
And even not, probably not even that long, and then there was another truck that was behind him that was following his buddy. And they hit head on. And so I kind of slid. We weren't going fast, and kind of slid the van up next to the car. And the security guy jumped out, and he couldn't get the Sam's door open. And I guess just with the adrenaline flowing, I told him to get out of the way, and I jerked the door open, and Sam was still sitting in his seat, but he's leaning over on the armrest. He had like four scratches on his head. That's the only injuries we could see, but he had internal injuries
mm-hmm.
that we didn't know. And and he started asking why now. And so I was like, and he's trying to scoot out of the car, and I'm like, Sam, sit still, we got help on the way. But I didn't know if we did or not, because we're actually in a, we is back there before they had the Verizon things, can you hear me now crap.
Yeah.
So we were in a dead zone, but somebody, I guess, you know, got a hold of him. And so I went and checked on the kid that was in the truck, him and his passenger, because gap, you know, running all out of this truck, and he couldn't get out of his truck.
Mm-hmm.
And so I jerked his door open, and he was a football player in high school, 17 years old. And I get him out of the truck, and the first thing he says when he gets out of trucks, he looks at the front of his truck and says, look what he did to my fucking truck. And so I grabbed him by the, I'm just a little guy.
Yeah.
I grabbed him by the back of his collar, and I said, come on over here. I want you to look at this. So I want you to look at these people, because you're probably going to work for them the rest of your life. Then go over there and sit next to the road. And so he did. He did. Mm-hmm. And now I get back. And so we can't keep Sam in the truck. And so, in the car.
Yeah.
So he keeps scooting over. He weighed 280 pounds. And so I said, well, let's just lay him right here on the highway between the door jamb and the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of which we did. And so I'm still trying to get, and I've got his phone now, and I've got my phone. I'm still trying to get help. And this Russo is in the van, but the doors are all open. Ordinarily, this dog would be gone. I mean, yeah. Totally untrained.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, he's got his paws on the back paws on the seat, and his front paws looking out the windshield. And Sam's laying there about 5 feet away from me,
mm-hmm.
and he's looking at something. And then I hear Sam going, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And it, but it wasn't like he was afraid. It was like he was negotiating with somebody. Mm-hmm. Like someone was going, you know, it's time for you to go. And Sam was going, no, I don't want to. And so finally, or not finally, immediately after that, he went, okay. 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 And so I immediately asked, you know, is he quit breathing?
Yeah.
And so a couple of the guys, you know, that had seen the wreck, and they're there helping me. And they're going, yeah, yeah, man, he's quit. I said, okay, okay. Who else knows CPR here? Well, this kid was a volunteer at a hospital. So he said, I do. I said, well, come over and do compressions. I'll do mouth to mouth. But he was gone.
Yeah.
He was gone. And so that's the true story of what actually went on out there.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get up and walk around. That didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the opening act, which they had been best friends, but were not best friends for a while.
Yeah.
And was only there because he needed money. And so Sam said, all right, he can come, but I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to see him. I don't want him on stage with me.
Yeah.
And so, but interviews I heard him give is actually what I'm telling you, only it's him. And he was holding Sam. There wasn't anyone holding Sam because I didn't know what injuries.
Yeah.
That Sam might have. I didn't want to, like, if he's got a broken neck or something, I didn't want to paralyze the guy.
Oh, yeah.
And again, we didn't think he was dying.
Mm-hmm.
Until he took his last breath, we didn't think he was dying. And so that's exactly what happened out there.
Yes, I remember when he passed away, my mom told me that morning that she had seen it on the news the night before. And just to kind of show people how big a deal your brother was, I was in fourth grade. My last period of the day was reading class, and our teacher announced to the class that Sam Kinison had passed away. And
did they really?
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget it. And asked for a moment of silence. Mind you, we were in a very upscale neighborhood in New Jersey.
Yeah.
That never happened with any other celebrity I ever remember when they passed away. When your brother passed away, we had a moment of silence in our fourth grade reading class for him. So
it's very touching, man.
Yeah, it's the truth. That's stayed with me ever since then. That's one of those things that just locked into my brain regarding your brother. Was like, our teacher must have thought something, you know, a lot of them to do that in school where, if somebody did that now, they'd be raising Cain.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, a couple questions, and I'll let you go, because I see we've gone over, and I apologize for that.
No, I don't apologize. If I didn't want to talk to you, I wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Do you think maybe your brother, when he stopped at the gas station, had a premonition of some type? He just, to unload the car?
I do.
Because, I mean, that's...
I really do. I don't know that he knew he was going to get killed or anything like that, but I think he knew something was going to happen. And it had been kind of... Just before we went on his honeymoon, we had a meeting with New Line on these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of this meeting, Sam gets up and goes, you know, it sounds like a great idea. If you all can work it out with my brother, then we're in business.
Mm-hmm.
And so and he leaves. So when I get out of the meeting, because these guys, you know, these execs are asking me, going, hey, are you sure he's into this? And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. And so I call him and I go, Sam, what's going on? And he goes, well, I was sitting there and I was thinking, I've attained everything that I wanted to attain. And I decided I needed to get some new goals.
Mm-hmm.
And so just little things like that, that, you know, just was like, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah. Something's been revealed to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. So last couple of questions. Had your brother not
passed away, where do you think he'd be doing now? Do you think he would have been one of these individuals who's sadly been caught up in this whole cancer culture bullshit?
Oh, no, no, no. He'd have been raving against that. I don't know how much stand-up that he would have done, because his goal really was to be in movies and television.
Okay.
And doing the movies that he was going to do and his own television series. What our plan was that he would do that, and then maybe during the summer we would do a 12-city tour.
Okay.
And so I think he still would have done stand-up, but nothing like he did.
Yeah.
But I don't think Sam's routines, if you want to call it that, was either his life experiences or that was his viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, he really thought that way, like the starving children. He really thought, why do they live out in the desert? You know, why don't they just move them?
Well, because he was speaking the truth.
Yeah. And so I think that he would have probably, you know, still been in movies doing that, and probably in the producing end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows where it would have went from there.
Yeah.
But as far as this political climate now, I would have felt sorry for these people.
Yeah. There's days I wish that I could just go off on air, but I'm, you know, I have, you know, I don't want to possibly cause myself problems down the line.
Yeah. And you probably would.
Oh, yeah.
But Sam would not have cared.
Yeah.
You know, first he'd had all the money that he wanted, and he would not have cared. I mean, probably Hollywood would have hated him, even though back in those, when he was big, he was actually a liberal.
Okay.
But I know him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a liberal that also made jokes about AIDS.
Yeah, I remember.
So this kind of stuff here, believe me, he'd have had a heyday.
Mm-hmm.
He would have had a heyday.
Yeah, it's sad we don't have somebody like him now that has the balls to say the stuff that needs to be said.
Yeah, well, then you got to have balls for the people that put them on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they control everything right now.
There's not many of them left either.
No, sure isn't.
I have friends that do sort of extreme shock rock, and they have to go overseas if they want to play and not get protested.
Yep.
All right, so is there anything going on now today in the world of Sam Kinison? I know there was the samkinison.org, I think it was called.
Yep. That kind of, you know, that was on MySpace. That kind of went away. We do have a site on Facebook.
Okay.
And as far as Sam, we still do projects.
Mm-hmm.
We still do projects with him. And it's like he's, be honest with you, it's like he's never died.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, obviously it isn't like when he was alive, because you only had a limited amount of material
mm-hmm.
that had been recorded in that 6 years.
Yeah.
But he still loved. I'd like to just say one thing before we get off. I lost a
Certainly.
Very good friend to cancer yesterday, Norm MacDonald.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the funniest guys I've ever been around. He was funnier off stage than he was on stage. But I wanted to tell you, he was with Sam flying to New York, and Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
Is flying with them. They're all in first class. And so Sam, the pilot comes on. Pilot comes on and goes, you know, my name is, you know, Bob Johnson or whatever. It was Johnson, but I don't know if that was his first name. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be your pilot today. And Sam screams, oh, no, not Crash Johnson. And the plane just... plane just erupts. And so this flight attendant come over and said, you know, if there's any more outbursts before we take off, you're gonna have to get off the plane. But that, when I think of Norm, I always think of him telling me that. And then, you know, whoever he's around, I'm there. He had to always tell him that story. Not Crash Johnson.
If he did that today, the Sky Marshals would be out there.
Yeah, that's right. They would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Ian, I've enjoyed it, brother, and I'll do it again with you sometime if you'd like.
Certainly. I appreciate this. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'll be releasing it in the next couple days. I'll send you a copy of the interview first so you can hear it.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Yep. And thank you. I count it a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you. I mean that.
Well, you have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
So that is it for the Deathcast this week, a.k.a. Lifecast, the life and times of Sam Kinison. Again, I really want to thank my guest, his brother, Bill. I had a lot of fun interviewing him. He's a really good guy, and I will be posting links in the show description to both the Sam Kinison page as well as where you can hear his Sunday morning sermons. Or you can just search for the Gospel According to Kinison on Facebook. Till next time, stay morbid.